History often moves slowly, almost imperceptibly. But sometimes, the world is forever changed by a single, brutal act of violence. Assassins tells the story set in these moments of chaos and fire. I'm Aslan Bahari, and on my new show, Assassins, I'll bring you the stories of assassinations that change the course of history. From seizing power to silencing dissidents, Assassins unpacks the moments in which someone decides that murder is the move. Search for Assassins with Aslan Bahari on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
There was a grisly discovery in the northern suburbs of Adelaide in late 2022. A torso found in a wheelie bin in a vacant lot, but no head, no arms, no legs below the knees. It was the body of Geoffrey McLean, a 55-year-old who went missing 2 months earlier. And now, his former partner is on trial, accused of killing him. I'm Stephen Stockwell. This is episode one of the case of the wheelie bin murder.
A gruesome discovery on vacant land in Adelaide's north. Police say the remains belong to missing man Geoffrey McLean.
When Geoffrey's body was located, it had been dismembered. It was located in a wheelie bin.
Four people have been arrested in relation to his death.
A woman who's accused of murdering her ex-partner.
They're hopeful they can provide relief to his family.
The trial we're taking you inside is exceptional, not just because it revolves around human remains found in a wheelie bin, but also because there are four defendants in this one, and all of their legal teams have packed into an Adelaide courtroom. The openings in this trial started on Tuesday, and it'll be intense. I expect at times it'll be very graphic, so just a warning for this series. But at its heart, it's a story about a man losing his life. Eva Blundis, the ABC's court reporter in Adelaide, has been in the room as these prosecution openings have been delivered in front of the jury, in front of the judge. Eva, welcome to the case of.
Hello, Stocky.
I'm so glad we've got you here for this trial because it is such a fascinating one. It really is such a strange kind of story. We're calling this the case of the wheelie bin murder because the remains of Geoffrey McLean were found in a wheelie bin. Can you tell us what we know about what happened here?
So it was October 2022 and it's a vacant lot in Adelaide's northern suburbs. We had a contractor who went in there. He was there cutting long grass and in that process he came across the wheelie bin. The court actually heard that he could smell something really pungent. He tried to move the bin but it was too heavy and that's when he called the police.
Yeah, right. Was the lid screwed shut or something?
Yeah, so the court heard that the lid was screwed shut and the police officer actually had to unscrew that and get it open that way, and that's when he made that awful, awful discovery.
We've got a torso in this wheelie bin. What about the rest of Geoffrey McLean's body?
Yeah, so his arms and his legs below the thighs and head were not in the bin.
Okay, yeah. And what are Cherie Glastonbury and Mark Murphy on charge for here?
So they're charged with the murder and they are charged with allegedly putting that torso there. The prosecution say that Geoffrey McLean was killed by them and that they allegedly sedated and then injected him with drugs.
Yeah, right. What can you tell us about Geoffrey McLean?
So we don't actually know too much about Geoffrey McLean, apart from the fact he was a 55-year-old man. He was reported missing on August 29th, 2022, and it was Cherie Glastonbury who reported him missing. But it's really important to note that he was actually last seen on August 18th. He lived in Andrews Farm in Adelaide's northern suburbs.
Yep, okay. And he was in a relationship or was living with Cherie Glastonbury at the time that he went missing, is that right?
Yeah, so the jury heard that the pair had actually known each other from when they both lived in Whyalla in their youth. And then they sort of reconnected, and they'd been in an on and off again relationship for about 12 months. The court heard that their relationship was quite tumultuous. At one stage, he's actually arrested for alleged assaults against Cherie. He then later goes to jail, not for those assaults, but for driving offences. And at that time, when he goes to jail, their relationship is said to have been quite rocky, but while he's in jail, they sort of reconnect, and the relationship gets better. Once he is then released, he and Cherie reconnect, and he moves back into that house. So he is back living there when he's said to have gone missing.
Yeah, right. Okay. Talking about the kind of tumultuous relationship that they had, I mean, yeah, the prosecution was saying that police had attended the house that he lived in with Cherie a number of times over that period before he was arrested for the driving offences. At one time, the prosecution saying that police saw, I think, bruises on her arms. So you get that idea of like a sort of tumultuous relationship. I mean, do we know anything about Cherie Glastonbury as a person outside of her relationship with Geoffrey McLean?
No, we don't actually know that much about Cherie at this stage. We do know that she was working where she met her co-accused, Mark Murphy.
Yeah, because I want to talk about Mark now as well. How does he fit into all of this?
So Mark and Cherie are said to have been colleagues for about 10 years, or for quite a long period of time. And all we've heard is that it went much further than being colleagues. So there's really not that much more we know about him and them.
Okay, gotcha. I mean, as well as the people we've talked about so far, so Cherie Glastonbury and Mark Murphy, the two people accused of murder, accused of the murder of Geoffrey McLean, there's also two other people involved in this as well. Who are they?
Yeah, so we've got Peter James Murphy, who is actually Mark's twin brother, and then we've got Peter's partner, Lynette Sexton. Now, they aren't charged with the murder, but they are charged with assisting to cover up the murder.
Right, yeah, I think the charge that I kind of have heard or have read around this is assisting an offender. So, I mean, murder, which Cherie and Mark have been charged with, that's pretty straightforward. But assisting an offender, what does that mean?
So it means that the person took an action knowing or believing that another person has committed the crime. So in this case, the prosecution is saying that the jury must find that those two people knew and believed that the murder had happened before assisting to cover it up.
Yeah, right. Okay. I'm interested in hearing some of the detail around this as well. I mean, we got a little bit in the openings with the prosecutor, Melissa Wilkinson, kind of talking through how she said both Peter Murphy and Lynette Sexton had assisted Cherie Glastonbury and Mark Murphy in this process, but we'll come to all of that in good time. First thing I want to get an idea of, though, is how are these people fitting in the room? Have we got these four people all sitting in the dock in the courtroom together?
We do. So it's quite a packed courtroom and quite a packed dock. So we have the dock, which is, if you're sitting in the public gallery, it's to the right of the judge and the bar table. So we've got actually two rows in there, which is perfect given there are four defendants in there. So we've got Cherie down the bottom. She's sitting next to Peter. And then in the row behind, we have Mark and Lynette.
Gotcha. I mean, you did mention that Peter and Mark are twins. Are you sure Cherie is sitting next to Peter?
Yes.
Okay, great. Just wanted to check. Now, there was a lot in the prosecution opening. It went for, like, I think almost 2 days. And the prosecution gave kind of like a quick hit of what they said happened on the night that Geoffrey McLean was murdered. And then they ran through a kind of history. They actually gave a calendar to the jury so they could track a whole bunch of different dates. And one of the things that they were doing at that point was running through a number of previous assaults of Geoffrey McLean, the prosecution saying, perpetrated or organised by Cherie Glastonbury. What did we hear about all of that?
So these alleged assaults are said to have happened once Geoffrey McLean comes out of prison for those driving offences. So it's all in sort of a few months before his alleged murder. Now, on the first occasion, he allegedly had accelerant squirted in his eyes by Mark Murphy. And then on another occasion, it's alleged he was hit on the head with a log splitter by Mark Murphy again.
Oof. And there's a third assault as well. Prosecution isn't alleging that's Mark Murphy, though. They're saying this is another bloke, Anthony Lloyd, who is actually in prison already. Is that right?
Correct. So he's actually already convicted for throwing acid on Jeffrey McLean on another occasion, and he's another ex of Cherie's.
Right. Okay. We're going to probably end up having a bit of a family tree on this season of The Case Of.
But yes.
Don't worry if you're struggling to keep track. We'll be really clear about who's who as we're talking through this. There's a lot in this episode because it's the prosecution opening. So it'll get easier once we dive into the evidence and much clearer as we work through all of this. I mean, Eva, it was interesting when you were talking about the accelerant being squirted in Jeffrey McLean's eyes. I remember listening to the prosecution opening and hearing a point about how Jeffrey McLean, I think at that point, described a short man about 5'4" with an egg-shaped head emerging, I think, from some bushes and squirting him. So that was a very colourful description, I thought, of that process.
Yeah, very, very colourful. And it also heard that it's alleged that Mark also referred to him as Macca, which was a nickname that Jeffrey McLean was known by.
Yeah, right. Interesting, yeah, the kind of the use of the nickname in that situation and how the prosecution, I guess, we'll use that. I was actually a bit surprised in the prosecution openings, Eva, that we didn't hear much about the alleged murder, you know, kind of how it actually unfolded on that evening in August. You know, we heard prosecution allege that it was a deliberate overdose that was administered to Jeffrey McLean by somebody else. We didn't hear much about it. It was really more about kind of people's movements and actions prior to that, and then a lot of detail about what's happened after that as well.
Yeah, so the prosecution was really adamant in that this is a circumstantial case. So it's the events before and after that the prosecution say will show that they are guilty of his murder. So we actually heard on that occasion, like I mentioned before, the last time Jeffrey McLean was seen alive was on August 18th, and that was with Cherie leaving a hotel. They then are alleged to have gone back to her house, and then he's never seen again. So with all of that, as well as some telephone connections and some phone connections and all of that data, that sort of is alleged to have sort of set everyone up in that location.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, you talk about the phone data. I was surprised to hear a very familiar name to listeners of The Case Of and to Mushroom Case Daily. Dr. Matthew Sorrell was pointed to as a witness who will be called during the trial to give evidence on phone location. Dr. Matthew Sorrell we heard from during the trial of Aaron Patterson, giving evidence around where Aaron Patterson's phone was on certain days and certain times. So I imagine we'll be hearing from him around some of those location details and what phone was connecting to what when.
Yeah, we will. And so there's actually going to be quite a lot of phone tower evidence, both allegedly when the murder happened, afterwards to do with the disposal of his body. We also heard that a lot of phones were going on and off at different points, and some of the defendants actually had up to three phones. So it's going to get quite complicated, but it's quite detailed by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Okay, great. So we'll have two trees. We'll have a family tree of all the various people involved in this trial, and then we'll have another tree, an appendix of sorts with the related phones that they have as well. Keep an eye on the episode descriptions of The Case Of for those details. Eva, you know, we're talking a lot about kind of what the prosecution is saying is happening through here. They painted a picture of, you know, what has been the relationship between Jeffrey McLean and Cherie Glastonbury in the lead up to this, you know, talking about kind of movements around the time of the alleged murder and after. What is the evidence that it sounds like the prosecution is going to be relying on in this trial?
It sounds like that phone evidence, yes, but there's also, we heard yesterday, going to be some clandestine recordings played to the jury. So the police lawfully put these surveillance devices into the house where the Murphys were living with Lynette Sexton. Mm-hmm. And the prosecution says that these recordings actually capture Mark Murphy admitting to acts relating to the murder, but the prosecution was very adamant in saying Cherie Glastonbury was not present in those conversations. However, on a little side note, we also heard, if we're sort of just going a little bit forward in time, but it's important to note, when Cherie Glastonbury was arrested for the murder of Jeffrey McLean in March 2023, she's alleged to have made some comments to a cellmate along the lines, she never admitted to any involvement in the alleged murder. However, she was commenting on a few things that the prosecution say she could only know if she had knowledge of the murder.
Oh, like what?
She's said to have said things relating to the torso and why she believes someone might dispose of the arms. She says that it could be to cover up that he was given a hot shot.
Oh, was there any description of what a hot shot is?
Yeah, no, there wasn't. There wasn't.
Okay, great. I appreciate that, you know, this time of a trial, we're really limited by what the prosecution has told the jury. And at this stage, all of this is just an allegation from the prosecution as well. So, you know, we're using the word alleged a lot because at this stage, we haven't had any evidence presented by the prosecution. It's just what they say will come during the trial. They're kind of mapping out where this is going. That's why, you know, these episodes sometimes get a little bit longer because there's so much we've got to get in, and an episode like this helps set out where a trial is likely to go and unfold as we run through it. Eva, any motive presented during the prosecution opening?
So we have heard that as well as that tumultuous relationship occurring in the lead up to Geoffrey McLean's death, it's also alleged that Cherie had a financial motive. We heard yesterday from the prosecutor that in fact Cherie Glastonbury was listed on Geoffrey McLean's superannuation, but you know, obviously we haven't heard evidence of that before. And as you did note before, yeah, we do have to be careful, of course, because the evidence that is brought before the court by these witnesses may be different in ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Eva, yeah, we've talked a lot about the prosecution opening. It ran for, I think, almost 2 days, wrapped up at the end of yesterday afternoon. Do we get 4 defence openings now with the 4 different defendants in this trial?
No, we actually won't be in this case. We're going straight into evidence, so it's sort of quite a fast-paced moving prosecution case.
Right. I mean, is it normal that you wouldn't have defence openings in, is that a South Australian thing? Is that a multiple defendant murder trial thing?
No, so it's actually, they have the option to open, but it's up to each defendant to decide whether they want to open or just wait until their closings or their case. So yeah, it's sort of just up to them. And in this case, all 4 have decided that they don't want their barristers to open.
Okay. Yeah, right. I mean, I guess they've got the opportunity to, yeah, respond in the closing arguments and then also, you know, cross-examine the various witnesses as they start appearing in court from today. I mean, Eva, you know, before we even get to the witnesses, you know, we're talking about the number of people in this room. You've got a heap of lawyers, barristers. The bar table, which is the, you know, the desk in the middle of the table that all the lawyers and barristers sit around, must be absolutely packed with everyone here.
It really, really is packed. It's a very busy bar table. So you can kind of imagine this bar table. It's in the centre of the courtroom. So you've got the public gallery where I'm sitting, and then in front of me and sort of in line with the dock, you've got the bar table, and then, of course, the judge. So on that bar table, we've actually got 2 prosecutors. Then we've got 2 barristers for each defendant except Lynette, who only has 1. Mm-hmm. So we're looking about almost 20 people around the place. It's a sort of quick pace moving area, and we've also got some other lawyers popping in and out. So they're each defendant's solicitors. So they're sort of the instructing solicitors. So they're sort of, there's not really much room left on the bar table, so they're back sitting with us in the public gallery. But yeah, it's quite intense. It's quite intense. Now, of those barristers, there are some to note. We've got 2 King's Counsels in there, one of whom is Murray Shaw, who is representing Cherie Glastonbury.
Her name sounds familiar. Who's she represented previously?
So she has actually previously represented Mark Ray Hayden. So he's a Snowtown murder accomplice. As well as that, at one stage she defended Bevan Spencer von Einem, a suspected serial killer in South Australia who is alleged to have been linked to the family murders.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, it sounds pretty crowded around the bar table here. I mean, are you all fitting in this room in the Adelaide Supreme Court?
Yes, we are. It's one of the biggest courtrooms in the Sir Samuel Way building, which is sort of the main Supreme and District Court building. So, yeah, we're just fitting in, but there's still some room in the public gallery.
Okay, yeah. I mean, are there many members of the public in the gallery? Are there family of Geoffrey McLean hanging out, watching the proceedings at this stage?
There is no family of Jeffrey McLean so far. However, there are some supporters of the Murphys.
Yep. Okay. I'm always interested in how these processes unfold because, you know, we never know who's going to be called as a witness through a trial. It could be that the family of Jeffrey McLean is called as a witness and they can't be in the room until that point. And so maybe they're sitting in the gallery after they've given evidence. If they are giving evidence, we don't know how that's going to unfold. I mean, Eva, we're a couple of days into this trial, but it is not without its challenges. There's been a huge amount for the jury to take in, just so much information in a prosecution opening. We have really concentrated it down in this episode. But for the jury, we have already lost one.
We have. It was quite funny on the first day of the trial, on the first day of the opening, the jury was called back in and Justice Kimber sort of went, oh, I'm missing a juror. So we're actually not sure where he was. I think he missed the call up. He must have been in the bathroom maybe or having a snack.
I appreciated the line from Justice Kimber. I've never lost one before. And the laugh that echoed around the courtroom at that moment, I remember Rachel Brown, who we worked with on Mushroom Case Daily, once saying a joke is 10 times funnier if it comes from a judge.
It definitely is. And especially when you're hearing some of these, you know, quite gruesome allegations, you need some light relief.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's part of it as well. You know, it's, you know, we've had a few little, you know, laughs throughout this process. This is a very dark story that we are covering here, but that pressure and that darkness, I mean, it sort of wants for those kind of releases at times. And part of the reason I think you hear those laughs in a courtroom is because when there are those lighter moments, they're really appreciated at times.
Definitely.
Eva, you know, 15 jurors for the trial here. How does this work with reserves and like in South Australia?
So we'll only need 12 jurors ultimately at the end. So there's three reserves. The reserves are sort of put in place in South Australia when there is such a long trial, as it's sort of almost inevitable that something will pop up, you know, who knows, a juror could have a family emergency or something like that. So it's just sort of a safety precaution, really. And then at the end, when it's time to instruct the jury and for them to deliberate, those three jurors, if they're still there, the three leftover jurors, so to speak, will be dismissed.
Right. Okay. So they're kind of picked at the beginning with the intention of being reserves. It's not a pool of 15 and then kind of balloted off like it is in Victoria.
I should clarify, it is a ballot. So it is that 15 and then it's the three that get dropped off at the end are just unlucky and have spent the last three months listening to evidence they don't need to think about anymore.
Yeah, or depending on
or
how
lucky.
You look at it.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah, could be
yeah.
Lucky.
Exactly.
I remember talking to Christian Silver, also from Mushroom Case Daily, in fact, about how jurors react when they are balloted off. And I thought they would be disappointed. And I remember him saying in some instances there is a look of incredible relief on their faces in those moments.
Definitely.
Eva, you mentioned this is set down for 3 months, so this is quite a long trial.
It is. It's going to take a very long time. It's an extremely important job for this jury. They have to remain very focused and there is a lot of evidence. So it's going to be an interesting 3 months. And of course, as we know, just because 3 months are set down doesn't mean it's just going to be 3 months. You know, anything can happen along the way and there can be adjournments for all sorts of reasons.
Yeah, and legal argument, things being discussed, all that sort of stuff. So, Eva, looking forward to diving into this with you and taking us all the way through. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Case Of.
Thank you for having me.
If you have any questions about this trial, about anything else we're doing on The Case Of, please get in touch. You can email us thecaseof@abc.net.au. And as always, I cannot recommend ABC Listen enough. It is the ABC's audio app. There's all sorts of wonderful stuff in there. You've got The Case Of, many other things. But if you are listening on another platform, leave us a rating, give us a review, because it means that other people will be able to find the case of the Wheatley Bin murder. The Case of the Wheatley Bin Murder is produced by ABC Audio Studios and ABC News. This episode was reported by Eva Blandis and presented by me, Stephen Stockwell. Our supervising producer is Greg Muller and our executive producer is Claire Rawlinson. Thank you to senior lawyer Jasmine Sims, our legal queen, for her legal advice for this and many other episodes. Also to the South Australian Newsroom and to Audio Studios manager Eric George. This episode was produced on the land of the Kaurna and Wurundjeri people.